Miami isn't just a setting in Dexter Morgan's world, it's his accomplice. Under the relentless Florida sun, blood spatter takes on an almost antiseptic quality, making grotesque crime scenes look like a new section of Disney World, Dahmerland. This unsettling juxtaposition becomes the perfect backdrop for our protagonist's double life. By day, he's a quirky blood spatter analyst for Miami-Dade Police. By night, he's something else entirely. What makes Miami so perfect for Dexter is how the city itself wears masks. Tourist beaches and Art Deco buildings conceal darker realities beneath postcard-perfect scenery. The multicultural tapestry, Cuban, Spanish, flowing through crime scenes, diverse neighborhoods from Little Havana to Coral Gables, creates a complex social ecosystem where someone like Dexter can blend seamlessly. As he puts it, maybe that's why I love Miami. It's a city that understands disguise, where everyone maintains carefully crafted facades. The subtropical heat creates a pressure cooker effect, intensifying emotions and driving characters to extremes. Sudden tropical downpours mirror the story's emotional landscape, creating chaos on the streets just as violence erupts suddenly in the city's seemingly placid surface. In a place defined by appearances and hidden realities, who would notice one more person wearing a mask? Killing makes me feel good, Dexter admits. It works the knots out of darling Dexter's dark schemata. What makes this confession chilling is his matter-of-fact delivery. Dexter experiences his homicidal urges not as choices, but as whisperings from his dark passenger, an entity guiding his murderous impulses. This framing lets Dexter distance himself from his actions while acknowledging them. It raises uncomfortable questions. How much darkness do we compartmentalize? What parts of ourselves do we refuse to acknowledge? Dexter follows the Code of Harry, named after his adoptive father, which permits him to kill only murderers who escape justice. After each kill, he preserves a blood drop on a glass slide as a trophy. His compelling psychology stems from self-awareness about his emotional limitations. Whatever made me the way I am left me hollow, unable to feel, he explains, describing himself as an actor mimicking human emotions, with children being his only exception for genuine feelings. Can a monster have morals? In Dexter's case, the answer is a complicated yes. The Code of Harry transforms his homicidal urges into vigilante justice by directing them toward those who deserve to die. In flashbacks, Harry Morgan discovers teenage Dexter's disturbing tendencies after finding buried animal bones. Rather than trying to cure what he believed incurable, Harry channeled these urges. You can't help that, but you can channel it, control it, choose who you kill. The code demands meticulous research to confirm guilt, clean kills without unnecessary suffering, and discretion, don't get caught, both for Dexter's protection and to continue his work. This pragmatic approach raises profound questions. Is Harry complicit in creating a monster or making the best of an impossible situation? When Harry discovers a hospice nurse deliberately overdosing patients, he asks Dexter to stop her, effectively commissioning his first human kill. The code becomes Dexter's religion, with Harry as its prophet. But is it truly justice or merely rationalization? I fake human contact very well, Dexter boasts, his greatest achievement being not his killing technique, but his carefully crafted human persona. He has meticulously studied and replicated behaviors that allow him to blend into society. At work, he's the cheerful, quirky analyst bringing donuts. With Rita, whose trauma-induced aversion to physical intimacy perfectly suits his own lack of sexual desires, she wanted only masculine company, a sensitive, gentle man willing to wait indefinitely, he explains. Such men don't exist in Miami, but I could imitate those qualities perfectly. What makes Dexter's disguise compelling are moments it slips, revealing glimpses of genuine connection. Despite claiming emotional detachment, he shows authentic concern for his sister Deborah and an unexpected attachment to Rita's children. These moments raise questions. Is Dexter truly emotionless, or has he buried his capacity for connection too deeply? The novel suggests identity itself might be a performance. Dexter just happens to be more conscious of his role-playing than most. A new serial killer stalks Miami with methodology disturbingly familiar to Dexter. This killer targets prostitutes, dismembering them with surgical precision and leaving bodies completely drained of blood, a detail that fascinates Dexter as evidence of extraordinary control. As bodies appear in increasingly public locations, one victim's parts found in a hockey arena's goal net, Dexter realizes the killer is deliberately escalating for attention. A small mirror placed in one victim's hand suggests a specific message. The game turns personal when Dexter discovers someone entered his apartment. Nothing is missing, but something has been added, a Barbie doll with its head removed and body parts neatly wrapped in the freezer, mimicking the killer's human victims. The message is clear. The killer knows Dexter's true nature. The cat-and-mouse game intensifies as Dexter hunts the killer through Miami, following a refrigerated truck. The hunter becomes the hunted in a deadly dance between two predators who recognize themselves in each other. The novel's most shocking revelation comes in its final chapters. The refrigerated truck killer is Dexter's biological brother, Brian. This discovery forces Dexter to confront his darkness's origins and questions nature versus nurture in creating monsters. As young children, they witnessed their mother's murder by drug dealers who dismembered her with a chainsaw. "You were 3 years old, I was four," Brian explains. The brothers sat in dried blood for days, a traumatic event that shaped them both irrevocably. After rescue, the brothers were separated. Dexter was adopted by Harry Morgan, while Brian was institutionalized. "They thought you were young enough to recover. I was just a bit over the age limit," Brian explains. Dexter's response confirms their shared damage. It did, exactly the same. This revelation recontextualizes Dexter entirely. His dark passenger is the psychological manifestation of childhood trauma, with Harry's code giving structure to a damaged psyche. In the novel's conclusion, Dexter faces an impossible choice between his biological brother, who shares his darkness, and his adoptive sister, who represents his humanity. Brian kidnaps Deborah, intending her to be their first joint kill, a twisted bonding ritual. This dilemma embodies the book's central theme of duality. Despite claiming to be hollow, Dexter's actions reveal humanity, his concern for Rita's children, his willingness to protect Deborah, and his maintained relationships. Dexter ultimately chooses Deborah over Brian, humanity over monstrosity, while still feeling kinship with his murderous brother. His twisted moral code coexists with genuine affection. He is simultaneously monster and human, predator and protector. What makes Dexter compelling is how familiar his struggles feel. His compartmentalization reflects our own tendencies to separate parts of ourselves. His performance of normalcy echoes our social adaptations, while his search for meaning mirrors universal human longing.